This is the Championship Rounds with your host, Matthew Amayo.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 21 of the Championship Rounds podcast, hosted by yours truly, Matthew Amayo. Another weekend gone. Which included exciting fights from both MMA and boxing. UFC 231 was this past Saturday, with plenty to talk about. Didn't I tell you there was going to be fireworks on the preview episode? Because that's what I told you, and that's what happened. So we're going to go over that. We're going to go over Vasily Lomachenko's win over a tough Jose Pedraza, Valentina Shevchenko finally getting UFC gold around her waist, and the epic showdown that was Max Holloway versus Brian Ortega for the UFC Featherweight Championship, and much, much more. So let's get started with recent news. So I'd be remiss to not go over any recent news with you guys that's going on in the fight world. So we're going to get right into this. Let's start with some MMA first. Let's start with some mixed martial arts. It looks like a super fight between UFC Flyweight champ Henry Cejudo and UFC Bantamweight champ TJ Dillashaw is no longer taking place in Anaheim as originally expected, as well as advertised. A lot of commercials were popping up here in Southern California promoting this fight to take place from the Honda Center in Anaheim. So once again, it's no longer taking place in Anaheim at the Honda Center. So the fight has now been relocated to Brooklyn from the Barclays Center. Instead of the Honda Center in Anaheim, in an unexpected move, the fight will serve as the UFC's debut in their joint venture with ESPN, their streaming service, on the paid streaming service ESPN Plus. So for those wondering, Dillashaw is moving down to fight for Cejudo's 125-pound belt, if I haven't said that before. Not really mad at it. I think kicking off the UFC-ESPN partnership with a fight of this magnitude is great. I, for one, am currently an ESPN Plus subscriber, so to have this fight on there definitely makes my subscription to the service worth it. What other news we got? We got a former NFL D-end, Greg Hardy. He's set to make his UFC debut, I believe, on the same card against Alan Crowder. And I might be wrong, but I think this is his first nationally recognized athletic appearance since being exiled by the NFL for his domestic abuse case. Don't really have an opinion on the matter. I've been vocal about his career since he was fighting on Dana White's Contender Series from UFC Fight Pass. But news coming in that he's fighting on the ESPN Plus card isn't all that surprising. You didn't think Dana was going to let him fight on the Contender Series forever, did you? And at the end of the day, it is what it is. You know, it's going to draw eyes to the product in an unfortunate way due to Greg Hardy having that stigma on him. But once again, it is what it is. Two UFC vets will square off against each other in a rematch. So we got Roy Big Country Nelson versus Mirko Krokop facing off once again under the Bellator banner this time. Not in the UFC, but under the Bellator banner. And will serve as a main card fight under Michael Venom Page versus Paul Semtex Daly from the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. I think that about does it for MMA news. So it's time for some boxing now. We saw the First Lady, Cecilia Brækus, get the W last Saturday night in HBO's last boxing card. It's just sad, man. Wasn't really ready for this. Wasn't ready at all for HBO boxing to close its doors like that. You know, 45 years of the most memorable fights in sports history, a rich and storied history, may I add. And I'm not gonna lie, I definitely felt emotional, especially when I saw guys like Lampley, like Jim Lampley, Max Kellerman, and Roy Jones Jr. say their goodbyes. You know, it's just unfortunate. The closing montage was great. Took us from Foreman Frazier to Ali Foreman to the Thrilla in Manila, Hagler Hearns to Leonard Hearns to Leonard Hagler, Tyson's run, Tyson Douglas, Bo Holyfield to Cesar Chavez to Floyd to Pacquiao. And you know where I'm coming from. Just a lineage of all-time greats under that banner, under that HBO, the HBO run, the HBO World Championship run. No one else has really covered the sport of boxing like they have. Showtime's trying to follow suit. Showtime's kind of getting close. They're doing a really great job promoting the sport of boxing, but I think they've made a budget specifically with their venture. Well, they are pretty much CBS. They don't have a joint venture. They are pretty much CBS. So with having that CBS, you know, sign off, it just makes boxing great again with what Showtime is able to produce on their end. And all I can say is I can speak for plenty of others that HBO is and was the true home for boxing. And that's it. Now, what else we got? The World Boxing Council, the WBC, one of the governing bodies in the sport of boxing, has made Deontay Wilder versus Tyson Fury mandatory and orders an immediate rematch. It's only the logical plan, isn't it? I've seen mandatory matchups been ordered before, being made by different boxing organizations, and they all make sense. But most of the time, they never happen. They don't. Will this be any different? I definitely hope not. I still stand by them having a couple tune-up fights before the rematch, but that's just me. I know for a fact that they want each other immediately. You could see it on Instagram. You could hear it in Deontay Wilder's voice. You could hear it in Tyson Fury's demeanor. Him being back on Instagram, it looks like he's not going to be a recluse anymore or revert back to drugs. It looks like that he's fully committed to this rematch and trying to get the W and right some wrongs that he probably did in the first fight, which led to two knockdowns against him. But who knows when it happens, because it's just a matter of boxing politics not getting in the way of that potentially happening. So if there's no greedy promoters, Frank Warren on Tyson Fury's side or Al Haymon on Deontay Wilder's side, you know, who knows what's going to happen once 2019 comes into play as far as making that rematch. Other boxing news, Cal Brook won on Saturday, and I don't know if we're closer to a long-awaited fight with Amir Khan and Cal Brook or if we're further away from it. To make a long story short, he didn't really look great at all. Don't think he'll make his way to another title shot anytime soon or even at all. So right now, the only thing he has going for him is his fight with Amir Khan. I think that he's taken too many losses within the past couple years, taken too much punishment against guys like Triple G, against guys like Errol Spence, for him to climb up to the top of the mountain and become world champion again. And Amir Khan, that's the only logical fight that can make him any sort of money or get him any sort of attention. You know, he could keep fighting on DAZN all he wants, but at the end of the day, we all have to recognize that Amir Khan is the true challenge for him. That's the fight that we've been waiting for how long now? The past 4 years, 5 years? You know, there's been bad blood and trash talk between both of them, but a fight, unfortunately, has never come to fruition. So maybe we see that in 2019 also. Lastly, in boxing news, Emmanuel Navarrete beats Isaac Dogbe in an upset which served as the co-main for Lomachenko and Pedraza. Navarrete looked great, pretty much used his size and reach against Dogbe and bullied him. Landed a lot of left hands flush, pushed the pace, and now we have a new world champ at 122 pounds. This is a perfect segue. Since that was on the same card as Lomachenko and Pedraza, let's segue to Lomachenko-Pedraza, shall we? I'm going to state the obvious and say that this was far from Lomachenko's best performance, but I still find it impressive in more ways than one. I'll tell you why. It was just simply another tough matchup for Lomachenko because of the attempt to unify the lightweight belts and the consequences that go along with fighting guys with a much longer reach. Because we saw Lomachenko fight a guy that had longer reach in his last fight against Jorge Linares. Here against Jose Pedraza, it wasn't really any difference. Because we have a reach for Lomachenko at 65 inches, and then we got guys like Pedraza or Linares that are having a reach of 69 to 70 inches. So almost a 4.5 to 5 inch reach advantage there that we're talking about. What was tough here was Lomachenko never really had the opportunity to dictate the pace due to that reach advantage, or the reach disadvantage, may I add. What Pedraza did very well was his output, which kept Lomachenko at bay. You know, he's pawing the jab out there. He was really winging punches, really trying to not have Lomachenko establish some sort of rhythm or some sort of pace throughout the fight. But the thing was, is they weren't really effective. A lot of them weren't really landing clean. And that kind of tells a story and kind of paints the picture here for you on what happened in the 11th round of that fight. You know, every couple exchanges or so, Lomachenko had a small window of opportunity to get inside and land clean shots. But it seemed that this fight, it was few and far between. I'm not really a big fan of judging a fight, especially when there's one clean punch that lands. So for example, say Pedraza and Lomachenko were fighting, right? I'm not really a big fan of judging fights when it's really an uneventful round, and then we have to judge that round off one clean punch that a fighter lands. You know, I understand it's not going to be a war of attrition every single round, but having to judge off of one clean landed punch is just lame. It's tiresome. It's not broad. It's not concrete. And I think that just has a lot to do with the flaws in a 10-point scoring system like what boxing and MMA have currently. That's just how it is. But by the time the 11th round came, you know, Lomachenko's volume punching as well as his accurate punching led to two knockdowns, which pretty much made it a done deal for Lomachenko. Thus, Lomachenko winning via decision. I felt a lot of people, as I was scrolling through Twitter and the feeds, they were very critical, very, very critical of Lomachenko again. They've been critical of him since the Linares fight, as well as the fight against Pedraza last Saturday. I felt that the Linares fight kind of started all this because of the knockdown and him going through some sort of adversity. And I see where people are coming from, but this is where I see the opposite effect. You know, I'd like to see Lomachenko get tested like this, not on a frequent basis, but once every couple of fights, just to, you know, and show how tough of a guy he is, aside from being a world-class talented fighter. You know, I'd like to see him get tested like this, especially awkward matchups against guys like Linares or Pedraza. There isn't anything wrong with a little bit of adversity here. What I do wonder here is where people see Lomachenko on the pound-for-pound list. You know, can you have Terence Crawford overtake him at the top spot, or does he stay out? Can't go wrong either way, but I think Crawford very well can make a case as the number one guy in the world right now, pound for pound. I think Crawford has been slightly more impressive in his last couple of fights to deserve that title. So where does Lomachenko go from here as far as guys, as far as opponents? Now, I still think he has a ways to go before moving up. I think he hasn't finished business at 130 and needs a couple more wins at 130 before taking on guys like Mikey Garcia, who I do not doubt is number one on his list of guys to fight. I think that's Lomachenko's priorities, fighting Mikey Garcia in 2019. It'll be tough because Garcia moved up to fight Errol Spence. So he moved up in weight to fight Errol Spence, even though he does hold a title at lightweight. So we don't know where this is going to lead us. Maybe Lomachenko takes a fight around springtime to anticipate and time that fight with Garcia. So if Garcia wins against Spence, which I don't really think Lomachenko wants, I don't think we see that fight. Because if Garcia wins against Errol Spence, we're going to see him move up to 147. And we're going to see him fight against guys like Keith Thurman and Showtime Sean Porter, pretty much all those stars at welterweight. We're not going to see that Lomachenko-Mikey Garcia super fight this time around. So if Garcia wins, it's more likely he continues his quest at welterweight. So we'll see where that goes, but it'll definitely be interesting. UFC 231 time. Valentina Shevchenko looked amazing against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Pretty much controlled her all throughout on her way to a decision victory. It was just, in my opinion, it was just a mismatch. I think Shevchenko having that competitive edge and seeing Joanna in combat before in those amateur Muay Thai fights from about, 10 years ago, you know, those wins against her definitely played a factor. Size was the biggest factor, though. Just the disadvantage alone made it difficult for Joanna to mount any sort of offense. Valentina looked great with the takedowns, controlled the fight, whether it went to the ground or if it was in the clinch. It was just Valentina's night, plain and simple. So congrats to Valentina Shevchenko on a much-deserved flyweight championship. So now we could say that she's a UFC champion after all these years of chasing UFC gold. Let's talk a little bit about the main event to close out the show, because I have plenty to say about it. So the main event for UFC 231 was Max Holloway defending the UFC featherweight belt against number one contender Brian Ortega in a fight that absolutely did not disappoint. Going into this fight, as I was previewing last Saturday's event on the last episode, I wasn't shocked that Holloway was the betting underdog. He welcomed it with open arms, and rightfully so. I just thought that Ortega had more tools at this point in his career and all the momentum going towards his way to potentially dethrone Max. You know, the fight played out as we expected, with both guys trading. Max was betting that was getting the better of the exchanges and was landing clean and landing at will. Brian looked great in his own right. One thing that impressed me was his composure in a fight of this caliber, of this scale. Ortega was able to absorb anything Max threw at him, while attempting counters too, using kicks and throwing unorthodox strikes. Just goes to show you how comfortable Ortega is in the stand-up department now. Max was just too good, though. He even went as far as calling the round on when he was planning to go for the kill, when he was planning to go for the finish. And it wasn't in that round, but it happened, you know, after the round, in the middle of, in between round four and round five. Just the tenacity of Max, his accuracy, the volume of strikes, his ability to stay off the ground, which would have favored Ortega if they did go to the ground. You know, if that happened, it would have been dangerous for him. And there was times where he was on the ground, where Ortega did take him down at will, but he didn't stay there for that long. And Max just looked like an all-time great that night. The impressive things to take away from Ortega's performance here were obviously his ability to take punishment, no doubt about it. And this absolutely goes without saying. Just look at his face, I mean. Just look at Brian Ortega's face. He scored two takedowns against Max. Granted, Max didn't stay there that long once again. But Brian Ortega's face, good Lord. The entire left side of his face was busted up. It looked like he couldn't see out of that eye. He looked like Two-Face from Batman. But he showed some great counters. He threw unorthodox strikes, like I said. Like that upwards inverted elbow, like what Yair Rodriguez threw just last month. But in the end, you know, Max was just way too much. And he still stands here before us as the UFC featherweight champion. I can't say enough good things about Max. He's just a savage. He doesn't care if he takes any punches, as long as he gives and lands cleanly back. Switch stances stayed unpredictable. An underrated aspect of Holloway's game, in my opinion, is his understanding of angles and using that to his advantage. I think, though, that it helps a little bit with him being a large featherweight, but his movement is really underrated. He sets up well, and he's just technically sound. It's almost like we're watching an MMA Lomachenko, just a rough around the edges Lomachenko, where he has just unrelenting volume, which can potentially lead to devastating results like what we saw. And he's definitely on his way to being an all-time great. As far as greatest of all-time featherweights, he's for sure top three. I think that's still up in the air. I think that discussion's still up in the air. But I think the only knock on him is losing the Conor 5 years ago. But we can go on all day and say that was a different Max Holloway at the time. And his two fights against Aldo, people might make the claim that Aldo was past his prime at the time. But I don't think that's a fair assumption, because Aldo is still out here beating guys like Jeremy Stevens, who's a tough dude. And Aldo can possibly make one last run. Then you got Conor in the mix, who is finishing guys like Brandao, Seaver, Poirier, Mendez, en route to KOing Aldo in 8 seconds. Thing is with Max, I think he's been a dominant fighter ever since, you know, he suffered that loss to Conor. And one can make the argument that his fights were more exciting than what Aldo had to offer when Aldo was in his prime defending the featherweight belt. Because Aldo had some great fights that he could have finished, like the Uriah Faber one, for example. That was a prime example in the fight that he could have finished within two or three rounds. The thing is with Max, I think he's a dominant fighter. You know, I really can't pick one, because I think you can easily make the case for one of those three guys I just mentioned. Aldo, McGregor, and Holloway. If you point a gun to my head, I'll choose Aldo right now. Just because I think he's the OG, and he has the most featherweight defenses thus far, as far as having the title. And yes, I would count the WEC defenses along with the UFC defenses. But if Max keeps this up, he'll be the greatest flyweight for sure by the time 2019 is over. He'll be the greatest featherweight of all time if he just keeps on this pace. And if he moves up to lightweight next year, you know, I think he campaigns for that rematch against Conor. Or if Conor takes another long extended break, he can take the winner of Tony Ferguson, Khabib Nurmagomedov. It's no question he moves straight to the top of the heap at lightweight if he were to go to that division. If he were to move up in weight, he'll shoot up right to the top of the heap. Impossible to not even think that. You know, so Max isn't, he's in elite company. He is in elite company. And if he were to step up to lightweight and have some success there too, you can say he surpassed Connor even in that category, featherweight aside, as far as being one of the greatest fighters of all time. I mean, we'll see. I think 2019 is going to be a telling year for Max and Brian Ortega as well. Just got to see where they end up, because I did call in the preview episode to UFC 231 that this is going to be the first of maybe a classic trilogy between Brian Ortega and Max Holloway. I don't think that we see the last of them squaring off against each other in the octagon, but that's just me. You know, we got to see where they end up. If you guys didn't watch that fight, go watch it. It's crazy. It's absolute madness. It's a war, even though it was a little bit more of a one-sided war. You know, Brian Ortega hung in there, and he was still throwing some shots too. And he even stunned Holloway in the third round. So go watch that fight, and you're not going to regret it. Let's go on to fight of the week. So fight of the week, what should we do as fight of the week? Let's do Conor McGregor versus Max Holloway 1 from 2013. To me, this was Conor McGregor's coming out party. As soon as I saw him fight Max Holloway for the first time in 2013, a very, very young, inexperienced Max Holloway, I thought it was Conor McGregor's coming out party as well. And when I first saw him fight, just his movement, his fluidity, and his ability to throw strikes, I think, and his understanding of the striking game, I thought that at the time he was definitely a contender for Aldo. I called it right from that point forward. They even played his walkout, which is unusual for a preliminary fighter in the prelims. Just unusual for a crowd, because it was a hot Boston crowd, and Conor McGregor being Irish, it just created a scene that we've never seen before in the UFC. It was pandemonium just for a preliminary fight. So in that case, Conor McGregor versus Max Holloway won from 2013 in a fight that could have been a shutout. Three rounds to McGregor, zero to Max Holloway. But we got to see that rematch. I think that it's going to be a different story this time around. Definitely think that Holloway pulls it off, just being the tough guy that he is now, and just being experienced fighting tough guys along the way since 2013, en route to becoming quite possibly in the argument as being the best UFC featherweight of all time in history, in the books, not even in the UFC. We're talking about all time here in mixed martial arts and MMA history, the best featherweight. But that does it. We're going to close out the show here. That was the fight of the week, Conor McGregor versus Max Holloway 1. If you guys like what you hear, if you want to keep continuing to listening to the Championship Rounds, your go-to boxing and mixed martial arts podcast, follow me on Spotify and download each and every episode so you don't miss out on any. If you want to subscribe to me on Apple Podcasts, that's an option as well. Go ahead and hit the subscribe button. And then once you hit the subscribe button, all the episodes automatically download for you on the Apple Podcast app. So you can still get your fix of analysis, breakdowns, previews. But that does it for the Championship Rounds. So we're going to be on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, download button, subscribe button. And if you could do me a favor and please leave a review on the Apple Podcast app. There should be a star rating on there that you could leave on a 1 to 5 scale. Whatever you think is appropriate, go ahead and hit that, and then write a little short review of what you think about the Championship Rounds. And I really do appreciate your guys' support, and we'll be back with another episode. What's this week? Oh, Canelo Alvarez. We got Canelo versus Rocky Fielding this Saturday night live from DAZN. Not on pay-per-view, but from DAZN. We got Canelo versus Rocky. So if you want to watch that, there is a free trial on DAZN for you to start, so you don't have to resort to any other streaming services. But that does it. You guys have a good rest of your week, and we'll talk to you guys soon. We'll talk Canelo versus Rocky Fielding. See you later, guys.